you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Welcome to the Hawks Talk Podcast, brought to you by your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealers. Mike Syme with Charlie Romeliotis. I am Pat Boyle. How you doing?
What's going on?
Not much.
Dog days.
Yeah, 3 weeks away from the start of training camp, thank goodness. And of course, everyone's still asking what's going on with Crawford. So here's where I'm going to start the podcast this week, Charlie. Let's take Crawford's health off the table for now. We'll get more into that when we dive into the email bag. What's your biggest concern with training camp 3 weeks away? As you head into it, what would be the biggest concern you have about the Hawks?
Yeah, I would, obviously the biggest concern would have been the Crawford, but I think that the biggest, what I'm going to be watching for at training camp is if Henry Yokiharju is going to be a top four defenseman or even crack the roster, because I think there was a little bit of leeway opened up when Gustav Forsling got hurt, because it kind of bought Yokiharju maybe a little bit of time to develop in the AHL. But now that Forsling isn't going to be there for the start of the season, it really opened up the door for Yokiharju to kind of take that, maybe take a roster spot away. So I'm certainly going to be looking for that. But also, this is a big concern for me, is who's going to play on the right wing on Toews and Saad line if Joel Quenneville is going to put Saad and Toews together on the top line. Because initially I thought it might be Hinostroza, but then they traded him away. So now the only real option is Dylan Sakura, and that's asking a lot of the youngster who only played in, what, six games last year in a mm-hmm. small sample size. So
Where do you have DeBrincat right now?
I would put DeBrincat with Schmaltz and Kane. I know Joel Quenneville is probably not going to go there, but I don't even know if I like DeBrincat on the first line playing more of a defensive checking role against matching up against the other top lines. I kind of like him in that scoring role where Kane and DeBrincat can kind of play off each other like Panarin and Kane did a few years ago. So I'm not sure where exactly. Obviously, Joel Quenneville at the convention toyed around with playing Saad with Patrick Kane. I'm not sure how I feel about that, but it's. There are going to be a lot of options, but I have no idea who's going to play on that first line with Jonathan Toews.
Okay, so my biggest concern, again, we take Crawford off the table, is defense. Because it's basically the same D as last year, which was porous, which wasn't great defensively or offensively. And they added Brandon Manning to it, and we all agree that he's a 5'6", something like that. So I, like you, feel like all my eggs are in the Henry Yokiharju basket to be able, A, to make the team, and then, B, play a top four role at such a young age. I mean, that is a lot of ifs and a lot of, I don't want to say wishful thinking, but, yeah, wishful thinking to think that, you know, a 19-year-old can come in and play, you know, top 4 minutes, which – seemingly looking at the depth chart, they would need to have happen. So that is my biggest concern heading in. I, like you, I'm really going to be interested to see how he tinkers with the lines. I did have Vinny penciled into a top six role somehow, top nine role for sure. But with him gone now, I don't know. Here's the thing. I mean, I think he's reluctant to put DeBrincat, Schmaltz, and Kane together because I think he feels that they lack any defensive presence.
Yeah, and so, they're all offensive, and there's no spreading of the wealth.
Right. So if he puts DeBrincat with Toews and Saad per se, you know, Toews would again make up for some any defensive lapses that are out there. Saad seemingly would play at both ends of the ice as well. So I think we may see that. It's just going to be interesting. We, you know, like you said, we heard the Saad chances of him playing with Kane as well. Look, I just like what I see. I'm with you. I think a lot of us, the narrative we have, or we're still like jilted by the Panarin departure. So we're trying to find, you know, the poor man's Panarin,
yeah,
or a reasonable facsimile to put in that spot. And I think you and I and many others are saying that, like, right now, Alex DeBrincat's the closest thing they have, which, again, there's only one Panarin, and DeBrincat, you know, plays a similar game, but he's not Artemi Panarin.
Right, and I think we're saying that, too, is because we saw how well Kane and Panarin worked together, where Kane was just sending saucers across the ice,
right,
and Panarin was just hammering them home from the circle. And I think to a degree that DeBrincat can provide that because he has such a quick and deceptive release.
Yes.
And we saw it at the Worlds, and we're seeing it in the Summer League too. I know it's they're not playing competition, but, you know, they're feeding off each other.
And that's why we don't think Saad, you know,
exactly,
that's not his game. He's a north-south,
right,
go hard to the net. And his pucks don't usually, you know, his goals aren't usually going to hit the twine. They're going to hit the bottom of the cage.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly,
what I mean?
And it's interesting that Quinville toyed around with Saad and Kane, because you figure Schmaltz or Anisimov is going to be centering that line, right? So then you put DeBrincat on the top line with Taze, but then who's your left wing?
Yeah.
You know, like I have no idea where they're going to go with it.
So that obviously, we'll see how that plays out at training camp when it starts in about 3 weeks. Let's head to the email bag. Thanks as always for you responding via Twitter, Charlie, and Black Hawks or Hawks Talk sends out the questions for you to get interactive with us, and we appreciate you guys doing that each and every week. Let's start with Tyrone. Of course, we got to start with Corey, right? Will Corey ever play hockey again? And if not, are the Hawks comfortable with the goalies they have under contract? Well, will he ever play hockey again? I'm going to go yes on that. As far as are they comfortable with the goalies they have under contract, I think they are if Corey's healthy. I mean, if all of a sudden Corey is unable to go for a long stretch of time, then you're looking at Cam Ward and Anton Forsberg and the revolving doors. So, yeah, I don't think they would be comfortable with that. But right now, to say, is Corey going to play hockey again? I think he will, but I will tell you, I don't think he will be necessarily ready to go to the start of the regular season.
Yeah, I agree. I wouldn't be surprised if Cam Ward is the opening night starter and Anton Forsberg is with Anton Forsberg backing him up. And I agree with you. I think if the Blackhawks, if you told me going into the season that Corey Crawford isn't going to play at all this year, I would be a little concerned with Ward and Forsberg going forward. But if you told me, hey, Crawford might miss the first month or whatever, and you know, you can obviously get by the first month or two without him, you know, even the first half of the season. The problem is you don't know which Crawford you're going to get when he does return.
Right.
You know, so like you don't even know if he's still going to be that elite player. I believe he will be because he hasn't, you know, you look at, I know he's getting up there in age, but he hasn't played a lot of NHL games compared to, like, Marc-Andre Fleury and all these other guys that have, like, 800 starts under their belt. Like, Corey Crawford only has, like, 500. So he's going to be – it's not like he has a lot of mileage on his body, so I think he'll be okay. It's honestly just, you know, he's been away from the game for 9 months. He still hasn't even been on the ice since, what is it, February? I do think Corey is going to play hockey again. I'm not confident that it's going to be, especially by game one of this year.
I've been around a lot of the Blackhawks that were at the convention, teammates of Corey's, coaches, and have asked them their thoughts on what they saw from that convention. And I told you that, you know, in my limited time seeing him, I looked at a guy who I didn't think necessarily was ready by his own admission.
Yep.
But talking to everybody else and a lot of other, you know, teammates of his and coaches and whatnot, they saw him extensively or more than I did, and their take was not as a bigger concern. And I don't think, you know, this is all sort of like off the record stuff that, you know, I we're not going to attach their name to it, details. But I was trying to just gauge where their comfortability factor was with Crawford and how he looked and how he seemed to act and the likelihood of him being ready to go. And I got sort of from them not the sense that I felt when I, you know, saw him in that ballroom and then when I saw him walk the catwalk and a few times talking to him after that. So, you know, everybody has their opinion, and just wanted to throw that in there as far as, you know, continuing to check in on this, the big story, which is Crawford's health, and trying to, you know, hear from the guys that know him best.
Yeah, and how much of that do you think is Joel and Stan and just the higher-ups expressing their confidence that Corey's going to be back, so there's not, like, for the teammates and everyone, there's not as much of a concern because the higher-ups aren't concerned, so they shouldn't be concerned.
Yeah, I mean, look, we brought this up on previous podcasts. The way this is going down is, you know, the Blackhawks medical team is not in charge of Corey right now.
Right.
So they're kind of in the dark, meaning management and the team, on exactly where he's at. You know, all the information they get has to come from Corey right now. Now, I think once the season, you know, once camp starts, I think the balance of treatment shifts to the team. Now, there still may be an NHL Players Association component to this, but they'll certainly know more once he's under their roof.
Right.
You know, initially I thought they were being overly optimistic, like they have been pretty much all off season. He'll be ready to go, he'll be ready to go, he'll be ready to go. And then Corey says at the convention, I may not be ready to go. So that right there was conflicting. But I guess gauging the temperature of everybody that is connected to the team, they were a little less concerned about it than what I came away with.
Right. Okay. So, well, that's obviously a good sign.
And that leads into our next question, another question regarding Corey. It comes from at DJAnn_HP. They ask, the odds Crawford will play a game before the end of the calendar year. Okay, and that makes things, you know, as we both say, we think there's a chance he's not ready to go in October for the start of the season. I will again go back to the difficulties that Sidney Crosby had in 11 and 12 when he missed 100-plus games, and some people thought his career was in jeopardy because of head trauma and head injuries, concussions. And look at how he has responded. And, oh, by the way, not only winning the Cups, but he has suffered head injuries since the 11-12 campaign. So I'm going to use that as my optimistic blueprint that a top player can return to form even after an extensive time dealing with something like this head injury. So I'm going to say the chances that he plays somewhere between now and the end of December at 85%. I think there's a good chance. I would, right now, if I was, and again, this is a complete guess, it's going by what he said at the convention and the fact that the clock is ticking and, you know, and basically him saying he felt it was only in the weeks leading up to the convention that he started feeling better. I'm going to say November would be my target date that I think we could see him back in on a number one basis getting a bulk of the start. So I'm going to go 85% that he plays in 2018, and I'm going to put my guesstimate as right around November 1st when he takes over and assumes the number one spot.
Yeah, I would agree. I would probably be in the 75 to 80% range. The thing that's difficult to compare with Crosby and Crawford is there was a defining blow with Crosby. Like, we saw it in the Winter Classic, and, you know, it just – and then I think there was another one. There was definitely another defining blow. Like, with Crawford, we still don't know when he suffered it.
No, but we think – now, do you not agree that the Malkin hit where Corey's out of the crease?
Yeah, that could have been it. I think he did take a – I can't remember if it was that same year, but I remember him taking a puck high. He took a few shots from with Shea Weber a few years ago, and like he's had, you know, he's taken a lot of high pucks to the head that he's shaken off. But again, that Malkin injury, I do remember that because I remember we talked about the Blackhawks not responding and sticking up for his teammate,
right,
and things like that. That could have been it, but there wasn't a defining blow, and that could have been it. But and another thing with the Crosby thing, I think he ended up going to a separate doctor.
Yeah.
And it's something with the neck issue too, where they like opened up an air wave or it had a bone that was pressing up against his neck. I'm not sure. I don't know if this is the case going on with Crawford too, but it's probably similar what they've been dealing with. I'm still going to put it at 75% to 80% just because, you know, Joel Quenneville and Stan Bowman and John McDonough, like all these guys are confident that Crawford is going to be back. They were saying hopeful by training camp. So if they're hopeful that he's going to return by training camp, it's got to be around that area. So I will agree with you. I think November is probably a good target.
All right, Sam Bolin asks, with Crawford, is this a playoff team? The next part of his question is, who do you think will have the biggest bounce back year and who needs to? All right, let's quickly put a bow on the Crawford discussion. Yeah, I think they are a playoff team with him. Now, again, that's assuming he's going to play at the level that we've become accustomed to seeing from Corey. But, I think there's a good chance that the team that finished, you know, let's see, how many points did they finish out? About 20 points out.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a lot of points.
But they were what, like 2 points out when Crawford did go down?
Right,
so
right.
They'll be in that area.
So I do think they will be a playoff team if Corey is back. Your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think they'll be right around the bubble range. I don't think they'll be a top three in the division, but certainly in the wild card.
All right, so there's plenty of candidates for bounce back years. Just the ones that come off the top of the head are Keith, Saad, Taves, Seabrook, Anisimov, and I'm going to put Marcus Kruger in the conversation as well, even though he was on two teams last year. He has certainly allowed room to improve coming back from a stint in the AHL. But of those candidates, and again, you need to have a majority of those play at the level that the back of their hockey card says for this team to be successful. I think Duncan Keith is my candidate to have the biggest bounce back year. Yes, you know, I know he's 35. Last year, he only had 2 goals. I think got his first goal in February.
Second was like the last game
of
the season.
He had 30 helpers, and he was a minus 29. Again, you brought it up, I think, on one of our last podcasts. A majority of those, the minus, he was a plus player when Corey went down, about the midway point of the season. Talking to him at the convention, he said he didn't handle losing well. And you can take that any way you want, attitude, how he handled the tough times. He knows that. He says he knows he needs to change it. A lot of his game is dependent upon who's behind him. So you could have, you know, 3 Norris Trophy candidates out there. If you've got a non-suitable number one NHL goalie in net, like they had a majority of last year, you're probably not going to come out on top too many times. So I think for me, Duncan Keith is a proud guy. He knows how to train. Even though he's at age 35, I think he's going to have the biggest bounce back year of that group.
I for sure think Duncan Keith is going to bounce back, and it's difficult because in the past it was like Scott Darling and Antti Raanta and Rami, all these guys were strong backup goaltenders, where if Corey wasn't starting the next night, it was still like, oh, we're right back in business because our backup is just as good or was performing just as well as Corey. Whereas this past year, it was, you know, soft goal after soft goal. And I imagine it was very frustrating on Duncan Keith, especially sure. him getting up there in the age. And I do for sure think that he's going to bounce back in a pretty big way, too, especially if he's paired with the right partner. But
that's
I'm
a big
go,
question. That's
yeah,
a big question.
It is a big question. I'm going to go with Brandon Saad, though, and I think only because you don't trade Artemi Panarin. And, you know, I know they brought Brandon Saad back because of his two-way game, and he can play on the PK as well. But, like, if he doesn't bounce back in that second year, we're going to look back at that Panarin trade as – a disaster, because Anton Forsberg didn't turn out either, and they thought they were getting a backup goalie as well. And I also think it's because Brandon Saad has maybe the biggest room to improve, because he's still in the prime of his career, and he had a pair of 30-goal seasons in Columbus, so there's definitely that room to – how can you not score 30 goals with Jonathan Toews as your center? You know, so, like, there's a room for him to score 30 goals and maybe put up 60, 65 points. You know, like, he could set a career high in points. And if he does that, it'll filter out. You know, it takes pressure off Patrick Kane, takes pressure off DeBrincat and Schmaltz, who are being asked to step up into these huge roles again. And, it, like, how are you going to ask DeBrincat to match his goal total from last year? Like, that, what he did last year was pretty impressive.
Sure.
So if Brandon Saad can alleviate all the pressure from the young guys and focus on himself and by his production increasing, Jonathan Toews' production is going to increase too by default. So I think that would be my bounce back candidate. I think he really needs to have a bounce back year.
I totally agree. And so it's funny. And I love The Athletic. I love Scotty Powers and everybody they've assembled over there. I did see a piece they wrote about how, you know, puck luck's going to play a role. And I mean, here, just my take on puck luck,
you earn your
some
bounces.
Of that luck. You know what I mean? You can't get the bounces going off the shin pads and off the inside of the skate and off the side of your stick, what have you, if you're not going to the paint. And I didn't see enough of that from Brandon Saad. So for me, make your puck luck. Go play like the North-South player they went out and reacquired.
Right.
So let's move on. Tony Ginerez. Sorry if I said that wrong, Tony. Tony wants to know, will the Blackhawks do something similar with Jonathan Toews that the Flyers did with Claude Giroux last season by moving him to wing and with the intention of trying to rejuvenate Toews and increase his production? We discussed this towards the back end of last year, whether that would be a good idea, keeping him out there to take key draws, but once the puck is dropped, take over as a wing. Well, first of all, this team doesn't have a lot of centers. So, you know, right away, you got to find the right person to take over that center role, and that's not something they have a surplus of right now. I don't see it happening. Q has been – it's been mentioned to him. He seems to want to have no part of it. Toews doesn't want to have any part of it. Toews, in fact, you know, we get into that philosophical discussion – focus more on the offensive side, maybe not as much on the defensive side to try to, you know, jumpstart your offensive production. Whenever that topic is brought up around the captain, he doesn't seem too happy about that either. He's like, I am the player I am. There's a reason why I'm a two-way player. I don't see changing that. You're not going to see me ignore a portion of the ice. And again, people are more like, a little cheating, you know, breaking the zone a little quicker, assuming that, you know, Duncan has control of the puck in the corner or whoever and look for that stretch pass or whatever. But, you know, seeing Jonathan Toews move to wing, I don't see it happening with the current makeup of this roster and with the current coach and the attitude right now of Toews. He still wants to be the center.
I agree. I think for as long as Joel Quenneville is the head coach, you will never see that happen, because he was on a radio station. I can't remember if it was with you guys on ESPN or if it was on 670, where, you know, someone mentioned moving Toews to the wing, and he was said,
no.
Absolutely
yeah.
not.
Yeah.
Absolutely not. So I definitely don't see that happening. But, you know, I would take it personal if I was Toews too, because yeah. you know, that's his game. He's been a center his entire career, and he won three
cups. But these are the types of questions that happen when you have three consecutive years of production that is declined. People go down these roads, right? Yeah, I mean, that's part of the business.
Yeah, and it's more about, like, if he were, he would probably still take the draws and then just kind of shift his way to that. I think Patrick Sharp did that for a couple, like, if a center was struggling, Sharp would take the draws and then move back to wing. In theory, that would be, you know, cool, but I wouldn't do it. I also look at Boston. Patrice Bergeron and Kopitar had down seasons a year ago, and then they bounced back in a big way. You know, I think just Taves at heart is a center. He's not going to change his game, and I don't think he needs to.
All right, here's a question from Shane Crosby. Where do the Blackhawks rank among the Central Division teams with their current roster? Well, you know, first of all, they were last year with 76 points in the Central. You know, if the players perform to their career averages, I still see them middle of the pack. Just to run down some of the moves that some of the teams in the Central made, you know, Nashville re-signed Hartman to that one-year deal. Saros and Ham Hughes are in Nashville. Hellebuck got the six-year deal in Winnipeg. They did lose Stastny. Minnesota re-signed Dumba and Zucker. They added JT Brown. You take a look at Colorado, Ian Cole, Matt Calvert. They re-signed Nieto. St. Louis, Bozak, Perron. They re-signed Fabry and Yaskin. And Dallas adds Pollock, Khudobin, and Como. So those are just some. I mean, look, there's a lot of transactions that take place. But, you know, again, and like that, there's so many question marks I have when I try to bring analysis to this team. And so many things have to fall into place for it for the team to end up being where I think they could be. I'm going to say middle of the pack in the Central. I still think Nashville and Winnipeg are the cream of the crop. I felt they were the two best teams in the West. I didn't like that they played before the Western Conference Finals, and I still think that that seven-game series did them a disservice for a waiting Vegas team. So don't get me started on that. I'm sure we'll have a podcast devoted to that somewhere down the line about, you know, the NHL forcing this so-called rivalry in the playoff situation. There'd be no better rivalry than two teams meeting in the Western Conference Finals if that's what they are. So I still think they're the cream of the crop, but I could see the Hawks jumping past to Colorado. St. Louis to me is interesting. I like what St. Louis has done.
Yeah, I would say Nashville and Winnipeg are just going to be fighting for the division, so I think they're 1 and 2. I would probably put St. Louis at 3, and then I like the Jim Montgomery hire for Dallas, so I would put Dallas at 4. And then 5, 6, 7 to me with Colorado, Minnesota, and Chicago, like that's kind of interchangeable. And a lot of it is kind of dependent on the health of Corey Crawford. So if we get a healthy Corey Crawford, I could see the Blackhawks slipping into that 5 spot just because I think maybe Colorado overachieved last year, and I think they might take a little bit of a step back. And Minnesota is another year older. I think they're going to be trending the wrong way. But if we look at the Blackhawks, they have a lot of ifs on their roster. If half of the ifs, you know, like it turn out, like we're saying, oh, if DeBrincat takes the next step, if Schmaltz does as well, if, you know, like I think Kane might be an 80-plus point player again, but yeah, I don't know.
He's the guy I'm least worried about. Right, I mean, but I can pretty much pencil him down.
Right, exactly. But I'm saying then, like, I'm not – like, DeBrincat's goal total might decrease a little bit just because of how well he did. He set a really high bar. But Schmaltz might take the next step. Or who, you know, so just if half of these ifs turn out and Corey Crawford, you know, if you get, what, a little more than half a season, you know, if we're being optimistic, then the Blackhawks will obviously be fighting in that maybe 4 or 5 range. But I definitely cannot see them in the top 3.
Yeah, and then we also remember, too, that they do have, you know, as of now, $5.4 million or so in cap space, that they can go out and add. And they can add a significant piece or two if need be. And yeah. that doesn't even include, you know, a salary that might be moving out if they found the right trade partner. So, you know, that still is in play. And again, I do feel, I feel the organization is on high alert. I do feel that while this offseason doesn't look like one that where you're pushing all your chips into the middle of the table, I think they're holding on to a couple of them, but the mentality is still there. And they know the window's closing with the star players. Quickly, we move on. Kevin Korpstein says, as the high-end younger D prospects develop, and there's a lot of them, Kevin, say a couple years out, where does Seabrook and the older D core fit with the team? Does his price tag make the Hawks attempt to find a way to deal him, even with the restrictions on his contract? Great question. Obviously, it is a... It's one that, you know, we're gonna have for the probably the remainder of Seabrook's time here in Chicago. He's got 6 years left on his deal. He's 33 years of age. He's got a no movement clause. You've got Boquist in the pipeline. He by all accounts is probably the top prospect, and we'll see if he'll be ready for the NHL in a year.
Mm-hmm.
Yoki Haru, we're all kind of penciling in to be ready to go this year. Ian Mitchell in Denver seemingly is trending that maybe he could be a year or so away. Bodan. They've got a lot of question marks. And the quicker they as an organization decide who are the keepers, who are the potential top four type guys, you know, maybe they can move on and use some of the wealth they have on the blue line because of the last two drafts. Maybe those pieces can be used to acquire help in other areas.
Right. So I'm kind of comparing this Blackhawks team to the Red Wings when the Red Wings were so dominant and then they extended all these like Datsyuk and Zetterberg and Cronwald, all these big contracts because it was they were just legacy contracts, like thank you for what you did. And
right.
now they're finally almost around the corner of getting out of those contracts, and they just let them burn. Like they didn't do anything with them. Like Cronwall is probably going to retire next year. And, you know, so like they let those contracts burn rather than trade them and maybe eat salary. I don't know if the Blackhawks are going to go that route. They would have to be really bad in 3 or 4 years to explore that option and just be like, hey, let's just burn it at this point. Or, you know, if they're still going to be competitive in 3 or 4 years, the only way you're getting rid of these type of contracts, no movement clause or not, is you're going to have to eat salary. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be a large portion, like at least half, you know, so because these are bigger type contracts. These aren't, you know, $4 million. This is $6 million. So I think that's the only way you would be getting out of that contract. And it really might all depend on the progression of the Hawks. Like if they flame out in a couple of years and we're looking at maybe another rebuild, then like you just let it ride or you know, whatever. But I think they're looking at this as a reload. Last year is a reload. And you mentioned all those top D prospects. I think they want those guys to be the second wave. And with Schmaltz and DeBrincat likely going to get extended as well, it's kind of going to be like the new, you know, the second coming while Taves and Kane are playing more secondary roles rather than being the core guys.
And you never know where a franchise is going to be. You know, if this franchise doesn't bounce back and make the playoffs, you know, we've said all bets are off, everything's on the table. And these are proud players. Brent is a proud player. He deserves a ton of credit for the three cups he is a part of in this city. If he's approached and, you know, they say, hey, by the way, your hometown of Vancouver, you know, saying it's a year or two or whatever out, is in the playoff mix. You want to make a run at a cup. You know, you're a Western Canadian kid or whatever. I'm just using that as a hypothetical. You know, maybe the stars align for him to be moved in that kind of scenario. But again, this is all dictated on where the organization is at. Now, if things stay the way they were last year, then you're going to see a lot of pieces attempted to be moved. If things get back on track, that's when you know, he'll likely want to stay and fulfill the contract. But, you know, I think you know, there's a lot of moving parts.
Right, exactly. Yeah, and I'm curious to see Seabrook this year because apparently he lost a lot of weight this offseason. And maybe not a lot, but there was a picture of him surfacing the web a couple weeks ago, and he did look to be in nice shape. So probably not the Brent Seabrook that we're going to see from the years past, but hopefully maybe a better bounce-back year than last year.
Brandon wants to know, do you think it is more likely that the Blackhawks make a trade or tank/sell at the deadline if they get off to a bad start? Again, that's we're trying to figure out if Corey's going to be ready to go in October or November or training camp or what have you, and we're already talking about the end of February and the trade deadline. So I think you heard Rocky Wirtz say if they don't get off to a start, you know, everything's possible. And I know that was – he backed down from that a little bit. But I do believe, again, it's – the organization is on high alert. They don't like where they're at. They know, you know, ticket prices are where they are. They got a new TV contract on the horizon. They need to get back on track, and they're going to do everything that they possibly can to do that. And if they think a move needs to be made with a player, a coach, or somebody in the front office, I think they are going to be willing to do that.
Yeah. If they were – this is kind of – obviously, it's contingent on Crawford. So whatever – wherever he is in his – recovery process, or if he's back on the ice, whatever. But like, if the Hawks are a couple points, or like 4, 5, 6 points out of a playoff spot by the trade deadline rolls around, I think they'll go for it. But if it's another disaster of a season where, you know, we come February, like I don't see why you don't just sell off again. You get another high draft pick. You can use it as trade ammo if you want. And then I think they're going to be real aggressive in the 2019 class, because like I was looking at the names before we got on here, like some of the guys already re-signed, but like Panarin, Erik Karlsson, Mark Stone, Jeff Skinner, Matt Duchene, Jordan Eberle, Tyler Seguin, like all these guys that we just saw, John Tavares, and that was the big fish in this year's pond. Like these are a bunch of big fishes. And I think if you do, you know, if disaster happens again last year, things go sideways, you have, it's justified where you can try to get out of Anisimov's contract, and you try to move these, you know, Jan Ruda, and he was signed for a 1-year deal, so his contract will be out the butt. You know, like, you'll have a lot of money next summer if things go sideways and you just decide to rebuild. Maybe not rebuild, but go out and get a big game player. But, I mean, I feel like you would be taking a step back anyway, because if it's another disaster of a season, like, there's going to be probably going to be a coaching change. There might be a front office change. You know, there are going to be a lot of changes before you think about, oh, maybe we'll go out and get a big game player, because you're going to have a lot of other problems than trying to have a lot of money to spend in 2019.
So with the start of training camp 3 weeks away, I think what you see is what you get as far as the roster goes.
Are you admitting it now?
I'm admitting it now. I don't.
We say that
again.
Now.
I don't quite understand exactly why things went they did this offseason, but when you look at the free agents left, what other than Rick Nash, and at age 34. I don't know what he's going to command, and I don't want to tie up money there that I can't go spend somewhere in season that's going to have a bigger impact for my team. So, I mean, do you look at that free agent list? Does anybody?
No.
No.
I mean, it's all – I mean, even going into this free agency, we were looking at – yeah. They're all aging guys. Yeah. Like, there are no impact
JBR,
players.
JBR, I mean, Tavares was the cream of the crop, and then it was
– Well, aside from the big-name players, I remember looking at the defensive group, and we're saying, like, no one really stands out to us because they're all 32 and older and, you know, whatever. So, yeah, I mean, Rick Nash would be the guy I would bring in on, like, a tryout basis and see where his conditioning's at and maybe serve as a spark plug on playing with Patrick Kane or whatever, but – yeah, I mean, this is probably going to be the roster.
Just as we get ready to exit stage right here, it's been, you know, a couple weeks now since the passing of Stan Mikita. I thought it was very cool. Pearl Jam at Wrigley Field honoring Stan Mikita on Monday night. I was listening to Michael Kopech's MLB debut on Tuesday, and Farmio gave a shout out to Makita. I've been approached by a lot of fans that have been following this team for many, many years, and there's just so many people that have great stories about Stan. You realize the legacy and the footprint he left in this town. And then on Monday of this week, the Hawks alumni had their annual event, their golf event. And I can say this, I've been in this business for over 20 years, and I've worked in some big markets across the country. And I truly believe that the Blackhawks alumni is one of the strongest alumni in all of professional sports. They've been doing this, Charlie, for 30 years. It's not like they started in 09 and they rode the wave. No, 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 no. Right. 30 years ago, the Cliff Corals and a guy like Stan Mikita, they knew they needed Stan's name to bring that group together. And they've been giving scholarship money to worthy students in the Chicagoland area for decades. And it really is impressive. It didn't just happen when the team got good. They were still a group that got together and played charity events. And what you'll see when a kid is paralyzed, they find a group that goes out there and will try to raise money in a local rink. It's just it's an amazing fraternity. And to be able to just be a part of it every so often and get a look at it, it's impressive. And I just want to give a tip of the hockey helmet to the Blackhawks alumni who do tremendous work, and a lot of that is because of Stan Mikita.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think he was obviously the headline grabber every year when these things happen. And I think a big testament, it also goes out to Rocky Wirtz for bringing all these guys back as ambassadors. And Chris Chelios is the most recent addition. And even Jeremy Roenick was at the convention. And all these ambassadors that want to come back to Chicago, not because they're winning, because there's a new culture that people want to be a part of this group and this family. So, yeah, and it was founded by guys like Stan Mikita, who was there from the beginning.
So that's going to do it for this week's Hawks Talk podcast. Thank you for chiming in with your emails. As always, just a couple more weeks here before the boys hit the ice and we start to talk about the 2018-2019 season.
Yeah, really quick, I also want to say we've had a lot of interaction with our fans and people that have been obviously submitting questions, and our listens and downloads have been unreal this summer. And it's probably a testament to the consistency that we've been doing this with and our viewers out there. And I encourage that everyone, wherever you're listening, to subscribe, write a review, rate us on iTunes, and get us up the charts, because it keeps us relevant. iTunes, or Apple Podcasts, Spotify, SoundCloud, wherever you listen, because that's when, and it just helps spread the word to other Blackhawks fans that don't know we're out there.
So absolutely.
We thank you for that.
Thanks as always for that. We'll have another one for you coming up next week. That'll do it for the Hawks Talk podcast, brought to you by our good friends at the Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealers. For Charlie Romeliotis, I'm Pat Boyle. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you next time.